Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Southeastern Conference is back. That means Florida at Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin's debut. We've got Florida State at Miami. Mike Norvell, the Florida State coach, is not going to be able to be there, but he has an interim coach. We'll tell you who that is and all about him. And looking forward to watching Miami quarterback De'Arik King. We've got all things college football to talk to you about with Matt Baker of the Tampa Bay Times on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. And Steve, we'd love to welcome our new sponsor to the podcast, Breitling Boutique, home of the beautiful Breitling watches. There's only 15 of these in the United States, and we're blessed to have one right here at beautiful International Plaza. Now, you need to check out these watches. You've seen these things. These are absolutely gorgeous. The new Endurance Pro, very lightweight, perfect for athletes, sort of the athleisure watch, if you will.
I'll take one with the blue band, please.
Oh, gosh.
Go ahead and pre-order it now for me.
Oh, man. I'm telling you, these things are amazing. You got to go try one on. We'll give you what the offer for that is, by the way. And then if you want to dress it up, how about the Chronomat? How about the one with the stainless steel? Just absolutely, you know, you people around you will just be jealous as soon as they see this thing. So go see our new friends at Breitling Boutique in International Plaza. You know, that's where the NFL quarterbacks and all the Hall of Fame baseball players and boxing champions go. Tell them Rick Stroud and Steve Versnick sent you, and you can get a free $60 Breitling cap when you try on a beautiful Breitling watch. Breitling Boutique, home of those beautiful Breitling watches in International Plaza.
You know, I think once you try them on, though, you're not going to be able to take it off. They're
that's
beautiful.
That's the idea.
They're beautiful.
I mean, you won't want to walk out there without one, I assure you. So make sure you go check them out, and it's great to have them aboard as our sponsor. Well, Steve, by the next time we have a podcast, the Tampa Bay Lightning could be Stanley Cup champions. They play tonight, of course, in Game 4 after that rousing 5-1 win with the emotion of Steven Stamkos. I still am getting goosebumps when I see the reaction of that bench on the sidelines. I don't know if he'll play again, but, man, he gave us one heck of a memory and a lot of momentum for the Lightning in this one. So they're just two wins away.
Yeah, so Game 4 is tonight, then it's a back-to-back. So Game 5 is Friday night, which means Saturday night. So by Saturday night, we could have a Stanley Cup champion.
That's just incredible to think of. And, of course, all they've been through in the bubble, and after losing Game 1 against Dallas, coming back with two pretty solid victories, yeah, to say the very least.
I believe Saturday night it'll be exactly 2 months that they've been in the bubble. They went up to Toronto on July 26th. And so Saturday is September 26th. So if they finish it out then, or if they have to go on to Game 6 on Monday night. But, yeah, they'll have been in the bubble 2 months. And that doesn't include the workouts. And they weren't in a bubble when they were in Tampa, but they were encouraged to, you know, obviously social distance and be careful and stay away and were tested and all that. So
yeah,
crazy 2 months.
Yeah, just a huge sacrifice. There'll be a lot of stories coming out of that. And I think they obviously grew closer as a team, had to do a lot. All they had was each other. Had to do a lot of things together, so that's been kind of cool.
Yeah, John Cooper today talked about how close and tight-knit this team is. He goes, tight-knit? Yeah, he goes, they would lay in traffic for each other. That's how tight-knit this group is. And Barclay Goodrow talked about how easy it was to fit in because it is such a tight-knit group, but they're very welcoming and open. He goes, not just the players, but the trainers and the management and the coaches and the equipment guys. And it's just it's a really good group, really tight-knit, but really open. And, you know, they care for each other and take care of each other and, you know, look out for each other.
I think it matters the people you have at the top of the organization, starting with the owner, Jeffrey Vennick. That is a first-class sports organization for all of sport, not just in the NHL. It's been voted as such in the past. And, you know, you really see how it feathers down all the way to the players and the type of, not just great players, but type of people that they get.
That chemistry matters in sports.
Yeah, it does. Oh, yeah, it does.
I remember, and this is 15 years ago, working for the Braves and getting to know that organization. That was at the tail end of their 15 straight division championships. And, you know, Bobby Cox is the manager there and that. And But talk to some people. There were some players over the last few years prior to when I got there that they had traded away for almost nothing. And you kind of wondered, you know, why would they make this trade? And it was good players in that. And it literally was they weren't very good people. They didn't fit in with this group. They weren't the right, you know, character mattered. And that was part of how they sustained that winning was that, you know, you see that in the Rays today. That group looks extremely tight-knit and extremely looking out for each other and fighting for each other at all times. And that matters and helps you in sports, man. You're around as much as you are, more than, you know, you're there more than your family. And you know, you have to rely on your teammates to succeed. And if you don't like or trust or can't rely on them, that it definitely hurts you as a team. And the more tight-knit you can be and the better group of people you have, the better your team has a chance to be.
Yeah, I've always thought, you know, the talent obviously is, you know, is where you start with mm-hmm. any successful team. But I think it's the best teams that win championships and not necessarily just the best talent. And I think this has the perfect mix of both. I mean, they're very talented, but they're good people and they're obviously very close. So it'll be fun to see if they can finish this off. And, of course, you know, it takes four to win. Don't think you haven't won anything yet. You're just halfway there.
If you remember in 2015, they had a 2-1 lead against Chicago in that Stanley Cup final and lost three straight, and so they ended up losing in six games. So it was a 2-1 series lead. They lost game one, won game two and three. So yeah, they can't take anything for granted. And a lot of the players from that team are still on this team, so I'm sure they remember that and are, you know, heeding those lessons of we can't let that happen again.
That's exactly right. The Tampa Bay Bucks, of course, they travel west. We're going to the Rocky Mountains out to Mile High Stadium in Denver. That's going to be an interesting trip, second road trip. Of course, the first one didn't go so well at New Orleans. This Denver Bronco team is beat up.
Very much so. Besides the 49ers, who are extremely beat up, and if you've seen their injury report this
week, they're right there with them.
Denver's right up there with, you know, and I don't think Denver's one of the better teams in the conference, the AFC, this year,
right.
And they're beat up. So, I mean, this is a prime time for Tampa Bay to go in and get a road victory and take care of business and become 2-1 on the season.
Huge opportunity. Draft Jeff Driscoll, a former Gator mm-hmm. quarterback, will start for them. He is 1-7 as a starter. He actually played, I thought he played pretty good. I mean, they lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers 26-20. Mm-hmm. Steelers are a very good defense. And he made some plays, and actually, I think they had the lead with about 4 minutes to go in that game. And Denver has been one of those places that Tom Brady has not had, probably the only place he hadn't had a great track record. He's lost a few playoff games out there, but. This is a different Denver team, of course. No Von mm-hmm. Miller. You know, they've lost one of their top receivers. It's going to be.
And how much would they like Shaquille Barrett on their team now?
Oh my goodness, yeah. Shaq goes back, and you know, after leading the NFL in sacks. But as he said, we talked to him on Thursday, and he was talking about, you know, there really wasn't an opportunity to stay there. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, they had Bradley Chubb, they had Von Miller. He was always going to be that guy that was going to be the valuable backup if there was an injury. And he wanted his chance to start. He certainly got it. There wasn't a lot of interest for him. The Bucs signed him to a one-year, $4 million deal, and boom, he leads the NFL in sacks with 19.5. Now he's got zero after two games, not the start he had last year when he had nine in the first 4 weeks. But I think he's creating some one-on-one matchups inside, and Ndamukong Suh has a couple of sacks. Will Golston, mm-hmm. Jason Pierre-Paul has a couple as well.
Well, they're scheming for him now. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, going into last season, nobody schemed for him. You were worried about Ndamukong Suh and some of the others, and mm-hmm. you know, Shaq Barrett was fine. But you know, now it's, okay, we got to stop that guy first.
That's exactly right. So, you know, he's going to have to adjust. And, you know, I think, you know, guys are typically motivated. In the NFL, every week there's somebody going back to their former team. But he actually played college ball out that way at Colorado State. So this is really kind of a homecoming for him in a way. And I think that, you know, the Bucs just have to continue to build. I mean, I wrote a story you guys should read in Sunday's Tampa Bay Times. It might be online on tampabay.com. All about Tom Brady and you know, of all the things that they wanted from Tom, the one thing they didn't ask for was for him to bring his playbook from New England. And so this transition he's had to make to Bruce Arians' offense has been problematic at times, and it's been difficult, and with the pandemic, damn near impossible. But they are making strides, and there's a couple plays that we enumerate that you saw from the last game with Mike Evans, you know, the seam route over the middle, which was very similar to the play that he cut off in New Orleans that resulted in an interception. It goes for 50 yards. against Carolina, and then a back shoulder throw for a touchdown that he said he practiced, like caught like 50 of those on the Friday before the game, and Tom Brady gave him the route, the coverage, and the throw, which was right on top of him. So you're starting to see some of the progress. Chris Godwin will be back in this game. They have yet to have both receivers completely healthy. I think this will be a huge boon for them, obviously. And Mike says that he's been doing the TB12 treatments and getting the massages and all of that. Says his hamstring has felt really good. He's very close to 100%. We know Godwin is out of the concussion protocol. And maybe having those two guys on the field at the same time, that could potentially open up something for Rob Gronkowski, who has yet to really become that involved in the passing game. Just 4 targets and 2 catches for 11 yards. Both of those against the Saints. So they've got a lot to offer from an offensive standpoint, as well as, you know, the three-headed monster at running back. I mean, they continue to use all these guys, whether it's Rojo, obviously has been sort of the opener, if you will, if you want to use the Rays phrase. And then they come in with LeSean McCoy sort of in the middle of the game to catch some passes. And then, boom, their closer has been a good one in Leonard Fournette. And I think Fournette will probably get more and more as the season goes on. I think he's going to be their RB1, if you will. But it's good also to keep him fresh for the fourth quarter if you have a lead, because you can really pound him up in there, sort of the way they used to do with the A-Train back in the day when they would have a lead, you know, with the Bucks that went on to win a Super Bowl. So defensively, look, this team is humming. You know, they just got to put together 4 quarters. They kind of took a nap in the second half last week against Carolina. But they did come up with the 4 turnovers and 5 sacks, you know, of Teddy Bridgewater. And if you can go out there and match that effort and play 4 quarters, it could be scary. So, you know, Bucs had a chance to get to 2-1, and right now they're tied in the division with New Orleans, which lost, you know, at Oakland Monday night. And, oh, by the way, I think the Saints have the Packers this week.
Yeah, they host us, what, Sunday night? That's the Sunday night game. So you'll see Al and Chris on the call there in New Orleans. So, yeah, the Bucs could be in first place by the end of this, by the end of Sunday.
First place by the end of Sunday. You got your Tampa Bay Rays have a chance to have the best record in the American League. Of course, they clinched the American League East on Wednesday night. That was exciting. And so now they could wind up with the best record in the American League.
Yeah, so I believe their magic number is 3. The A's can actually get to 39 wins. I don't know what the tie breaks are across the divisions, because
they don't really have
they don't play. They don't, they're not playing each other, so there's no that. I'm not exactly sure. So magic number of 3 would get you ahead of the A's. I think the magic number is 2 to get ahead of the Twins and the White Sox. The A's actually have 5 games left. They're playing tonight. Before after we're taping, and then they have 4 over the weekend, including a doubleheader. So they had missed some games earlier in the year. So, but yeah, the Rays could end up the number 1 seed. They're playing the Phillies this weekend. The Lightning could win the Stanley Cup, and the Bucks could be in first place after Sunday.
And no one can see them, unfortunately. You can watch them on TV, though, and you can listen to us break it down on Sports Day Tampa Bay. But, yeah, it's the most 2020 Tampa thing ever.
We can't have nice things.
Yeah, you can't have nice things, but you can have some nice things, I guess. Yeah. Look, you can buy some merch about all these championships. They're going to be hanging banners and you know, get your hats and t-shirts.
Yeah, maybe next week we're planning some social distance celebration with the Lightning. Who knows?
I think so. I mean, I think it's very possible. I'd like to see a parade. I don't know where it's headed, and I don't know how far apart.
It might be the world longest parade, because if everyone's got to be exactly 6 feet apart, that parade's going to go on forever.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It'll snake around Tampa a few times for sure. Maybe all the way up here to Lutz and then, you know, back down to where you're at in South Tampa there. But, yeah, that would be that cup has to make the rounds too. That's the great thing about the Stanley Cup, though. Like, each guy usually ends up with a day or two with it. And
they're actually negotiating the protocols in that, because the traveling with the cup and the party, you know, people want to have parties and this with it, but with COVID, that it's actually going to be different this year. I mean, it's,
can't drink out of it, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be different things that happen throughout. I mean, you know, it was cool to see the Stanley Cup's actually at the finals. Normally, they don't bring the cup in the building until someone can win it.
It's perched up there.
But, you know, they actually had it there for game 1, which was really cool, actually. It's just sitting over the, you know, the teams as they play, which is kind of a cool sight. NHL did very well with that. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting what the players get, you know, not only for winning it. Although, you know, everyone in the bubble there, I think they're secure. But once you go back, how do you get your day?
Right.
You know, and then you want to take it to wherever and with family and friends. You know, it's gonna they're negotiating all that, and I don't know how that's all going to work. But hopefully, yeah. The Lightning have to worry about that and figure that out.
Yeah, it's a nice problem to have for sure. Sort of like what the Rays had to do when they clinched the American League East. They couldn't have champagne, so they had little confetti poppers.
Mm-hmm.
You see a picture of Charlie Morton cleaning up in the clubhouse. Yeah. But they also went out and smoked the victory cigars.
Oh,
I
yeah.
thought that was a nice touch.
They were enjoying it with their Tampa Bay 98ers shirts and hats, which I love. So.
That's awesome.
I had some friends asking, what does the 98ers mean? And I was like, well, yeah, there's a whole stable of 98, the guys that could throw 98 in that bullpen. Oh, I forgot about that quote. You know,
yeah, they got the T-shirts with the four horsemen on mm-hmm. there. It's pretty cool. So, yeah, the 98ers. That's one of those galvanizing moments and statements by Kevin Cash that mm-hmm. has some legs. And sometimes, you know, that can change mm-hmm. your image and propel you, you know, into the World Series. Remember the Cincinnati Reds? What was it, the Wild Bunch or whatever it was?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. The Dibble and Myers and Franco, yeah. the three closers. Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, but, you know, look, the Rays—they can't all be freaking savages. So
no, of course not. Although, watch what you say about the Yankees. And it looks like the Rays are going to end up, as we do this right now, anyway, could well play the Toronto Blue Jays. Which I have to be honest with you. And first of all, two out of three in any series against any major league club, even one that maybe didn't make the playoffs this year, is a bit of a gamble because mm-hmm. this is baseball and that's not,
yep.
you know, you go out and somebody has a bad outing in game one, you're fighting for your life in game two.
Yep.
And so you can't have a crooked inning, you know, because the pressure mounts and then boom, you're home. So look out for that, number one. And then Toronto, of the teams that they beat everybody in the American League East, they had a winning record against everyone, but the least amount of wins they had was a 6-4 record against Toronto, and in this building mm-hmm. at the Trop, the Blue Jays have bashed a lot of home runs.
They have. Now, a lot of those yeah. games were early in the season. The Rays were struggling a little bit early, and the Blue Jays were a lot hotter early in the season.
That's true, too.
So, you know, they didn't play a lot of those games late.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it will be interesting. We'll have Mark Topkin on Tuesday's podcast to preview the playoffs, which will start later that night, so.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, I know there's been college football for the last couple weeks, but it's not college football until I can talk to Matt Baker each week, and that happens right now because the SEC is back. Matt Baker, of course, has been writing about college football all the while. And Matt, you know, I mean, look, this is all sort of a you know, 2020, the brave new world, right? Things change every day, and we've seen cancellations of games, and we're likely to see more cancellations of games. We've seen Mike Norvell get coronavirus himself and not be able to coach per se. So a lot of things are going on. Let me just ask you just in general, how you think it's gone? Are you, in other words, are you surprised? Is it about what you expected that, you know, we've had some games have to be postponed and others have not? I mean, how do you think it's going to go based on what you've seen the first few weeks?
The first part of that, thanks for having me on. The first part of that is really interesting. Because I'm trying to figure out what reasonable expectations were for this.
Right.
And I don't have a good answer. We knew there would be cancellations. I think the number so far as we record this at 4:40 on Thursday, I think there's been 21 cancellations, postponements, whatever, and like 49 games played or something like that. I don't know if that's a good number or a bad number. I mean, to some degree, it just depends relative to what your expectations were at certain times. If you had told me 2 months ago that there would be a season and the SEC would be getting ready to play and Florida State would have already played a game and Miami would have already played two, I would have taken that in a heartbeat because for a while it looked not good at all. Right. But if you had told me in April that we would have had 30% of the games canceled, or if you told me that And you know, at various points along the way, I would have said that seems high. So it's, I didn't know what to expect, I guess, is the bad answer. And I don't think that's gone poorly, but there's also a lot we don't know. You look at your beloved Red Wolves of Arkansas State, right?
Yeah.
they've had several cancellations after the Kansas State game, and Kansas State had issues after, you know, COVID issues after that game. Arkansas State did as well. I don't know. I'm not speculating here. I'm just stating a fact. I don't know to what extent that football game would have exacerbated things. Like nobody seems to think that it's football. The actual playing of football has been a big spreading event, but I don't know that for sure. Then you look at the USF and what happened with USF and Notre Dame. Again, I don't know. I'm not speculating, but I don't know to what extent the actual football game might have made things worse and spread it, because obviously that was a concern all along. So that's one of the concerns that I still have, just because I haven't seen enough. And you know, I'm hopeful that we can get through this and come out the other side and with a national title game in Miami on January 11th, where there's a, to some degree, undisputed national champion, or at least a clear national champion. And most importantly, of course, I'm hopeful that, you know, the outbreaks, you know, on campuses and everywhere else die down, and that, you know, nobody gets seriously ill or dies from this thing.
Along those lines, you know, when we were talking about college football, we weren't talking about the Big Ten or the Pac-12 playing, right? So, you know, you mentioned Arkansas State. Some of those teams did play, and, you know, I could be wrong, but if I'm sitting at home watching football games actually occur around the country, that would make me try to rethink what my decisions were. I don't have to get into, you know, why they made them or what has changed. But is this possible, what they're attempting to do in starting a season close to November or in November, playing somewhere between 6 or 8 games, and then I suppose with a conference championship maybe being considered for a national championship as well?
Well, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are different in that way. You know, the Big Ten, I think it's October 24th is when they're going to go. The Pac-12 is a week or two later. Again, as we record this, the Pac-12 is officially not yet a go, but every expectation is that that'll be announced Thursday evening. That week actually, I think, does make a difference, because that's a difference between 7 games or 8 games or 9 games and 6, 7, or 8, depending on how it all works out. And that, I think that's going to be very big, because, you know, just not in the college football playoff perspective here, but just me talking as an AP voter, I'm going to have to decide in the next couple weeks, where does an undefeated 2-0 Alabama stack up against a 5-0 or 4-0 Clemson against a 0-0 Ohio State? That's going to be really hard. And it's going to be, I think, to some degree harder in December when we're talking about an 11-1 or 10-1 Alabama against a, you know, 12-0 Clemson that had a soft schedule, and a 8-1 Ohio State team that lost to Michigan but won the Big Ten. You know, just stuff like that. It's going to be really weird, because even in a normal year, there's all these inconsistencies, but you factor in the fact that there's going to be not even the same amount of games, let alone the fact that there's no non-conference games or few non-conference games to give you some data points as to who deserves to be here versus who deserves to be where. So it's just going to be really weird. I don't think the Pac-12 has, aside from Oregon, the Pac-12 does not have a college football playoff contender, at least a serious one. And I don't think making the CFP is really driving the decision for them. I think the decision is, hey, if other people can do it, we probably can. Let's play some games. Let's make some of our TV money. Let's have a team in the Rose Bowl or whatever, and make our playoff money that way, even if we don't have a national title contender. But the Big Ten, I mean, with Ohio State in particular, Ohio State is absolutely one of the 4 most talented teams in the country. And in a normal year, we would be talking about them, or they'd be playing now as a number 1, number 2, number 3 team in the country. So it was important for them to have a chance to play, because I think the Buckeyes can be a very special team, and you know, we'll see how it works once things actually kick off, assuming they do actually kick off.
The impact of not playing, right, especially with respect to the Pac-12, and maybe to some extent the Big Ten, recruiting, I mean, this could have been used against them in some form or fashion, could it not? In other words, I don't know if a player would have tried to transfer this year. I don't know, you know, that they would that players would be less apt to go to those conferences because they didn't play. I mean, would that have had an impact?
Yes and no. I mean, we saw a lot of opt-outs. You look at like Sean sure. Wade and Wyatt Davis, two potential first-round guys from Ohio State. Both of them opted out when it wasn't looked like they weren't going to play. Penei right. Sewell at Oregon, you know, best offensive lineman in the country, opted out. There were some people who entered the portal pretty soon after the Mac bailed, a receiver at, I think it was Kent State, bailed. So you have some of that. As far as the recruiting, again, it's there's two sides to this coin. On one side, yes, you're right. It's they're not playing Ohio State, Michigan. They're out of sight, out of mind. You can make an argument, well, I don't think football is important. Otherwise, they'd be playing like we are at Alabama and Georgia sure. or wherever. On the other hand, the coaches and whoever could make an argument to players, look, we didn't play because we didn't think it was safe for your kids. And that's a pretty compelling point. And I'm going to go out on a limb here. Ohio State's going to get good players. They've gotten good players since the dawn of time. They're going to keep getting good players no matter what it looks like. Might there have been some things that hurt? Yeah. But this whole recruiting cycle is so weird because, you know, kids are going to sign without going to campuses in a lot of cases. And, you know, coaches haven't had the opportunity to go evaluate players in person in a long time. So it's going to be a weird recruiting cycle, this 2021 class in general. I think it'll be really interesting to see in December and then February what number of kids stay close to home. You know, Florida, the state of Florida as a whole has not recruited itself very well. That's why the Clemsons and Bamas and LSUs and those guys have gotten a lot of good players over the years. So I want to see if in this cycle that gets reversed, because with all the uncertainty, maybe a kid in Orlando or Broward or Miami who would have looked more at Clemson or Bama in the past, maybe they say, you know what? I don't know those programs as well. Maybe I'm going to be more inclined to go with the Gators or Noles or Canes.
Very interesting. Let's talk about the state schools, and we'll start in Tallahassee, where things not actually off to a great start there at Florida State for Mike Norvell. I mean, for starters, the poor guy has coronavirus, and so that's bring up some issues. But, you know, their opener was against the Georgia Tech team that won, what, three games or so a year yep. ago with a new coach, a new system sort of trying to be implemented, and they lose after having a two-score lead. What have you seen of the Seminoles so far?
Yeah, the week one game was not good. I mean, let's just face it. A lot, you know, for as good as they looked in the first 10 minutes or so, where they go down and score on their first drive, they block a kick, and the defense stands, and then they get another score and all that stuff. They looked very good, and then they looked like this, what I saw during the Willie Taggart era. You know, and to some degree, Jimbo, where there's a lack of discipline, there's too many penalties, some dumb penalties, false starts, I think there was two on one drive. When the offensive line had to go to a backup for whatever reason, it was bad. I mean, the turning point in the game, or one of them, came, Devontae Love Taylor from Mitchell High School, starting right tackle, goes down with an injury. Backup comes in, very next play, gets burned. James Blackman gets strip sacked. That sets up the game-winning field goal. I mean, that's how it happened, because the offensive line still isn't any good. So that's, to me, one of the surprises. Or I shouldn't say surprise. I had hoped and I thought I would see some progress there more, and there's not enough yet. And then the defensive line, which is extremely talented. You know, I'm still very high on Marvin Wilson and what he can do. I think he's a potential first-round guy. But he and the guys along the D-line didn't do enough, which is why they got carved up by Jeff Sims, a true freshman playing in his first college game, who, by the way, had been committed to Willie Taggart and the Noles for 10 months before the new staff, and he kind of didn't see eye to eye, and signs with Georgia Tech and beats him in his opener.
Yeah, that's particularly harsh. And then, you know, now, of course, with the coaching situation, I thought I used to know who the Florida State interim coach always was. Mm-hmm. Who is it now? And what's his story?
Yeah, it's not Odell Higgins for a change. You know, yeah. He's getting a respite from the interim duties. It's a guy named Chris Thompson. He's a 51-year-old Texas native. I've got a big story, coming out on him in the Tampa Bay Times and TampaBay.com. Because honestly, before this happened, I knew who he was. I knew the name, but I did not know a whole lot about him. So I went dug way back into his background, starting when he was a football and baseball player at TCU. He's just been kind of an anonymous guy in the background. Not only was he stuck behind an All-America tight end, he played tight end at TCU, but that guy was in the same recruiting class as him. He goes on, does baseball for a year, does really well at TCU, goes in the minors as a hard-hitting first baseman in the early 90s in the Oakland A system. There was a guy named Mark McGuire, who is a hard-hitting first baseman who kind of had a logjam behind him in the system. So, goes back to Chris Thompson goes back to football, climbs a ladder as an assistant, becomes a head coach at a school that a D2 school that shared its field with the local high school teams in Abilene. And then goes on and takes them to new heights and climbs up in the Division I ranks, and now finally has a chance to make an impression. I mean, the people who know him and have known him for a long time just rave about what a good human being he is. I didn't hear anyone that I talked to say anything remotely negative about him as a coach or again, more importantly, as a human being, just as a guy. And that in a profession of used car salesman, that was kind of refreshing to hear. And he hasn't been in a situation quite like this. The only comp I can give is he was the acting head coach for Texas Tech in 2012. For the bowl game when they came back to beat a Minnesota team that finished 6-7. That is not the same as at number 12 Miami as the acting head coach of the Florida State Seminoles. It's just not. But, we'll see how he does. And the added wrinkle to all this is Mike Norvell has still been involved with everything. He's been doing it from his house on Zoom. He has been watching practice on his computer. It's set up where he can yell at assistants, he can yell at players, he can correct things, again, from like his home office or bedroom or whatever it is. So, he has been actively involved in the game plan. But when it's time to actually call the plays and make the adjustments to what this defensive front is doing, it's going to be up to Chris Thompson and the rest of the Noles coaching staff, and we'll see how they do.
Out of all that, I keep hearing a profession of used car salesman.
It's true. Like,
yeah, no, I understand. I know.
Let's be honest. The recruiting stuff and you and I have dealt with enough over the years to know what you're getting, and to talk to someone and talk about someone who seems authentic is extremely refreshing. Pretty rare. And again, I heard that from enough people to think that is true here.
I always think college football is more interesting when Miami is interesting. And finally, and it has been a while, it looks like they have a real legitimate quarterback.
Absolutely, they do. De'Aaron King is good. I mean, I wrote a week or so ago that I think Kyle Trask and De'Aaron King are still kind of 1A and 1B in the state, just as they were at Manville High in Texas. And man, he's good. The numbers haven't been eye-popping yet, but I think they can get there. You look at what he did with his legs against UAB. Again, the numbers weren't great, but the defense was keying on him so much that that opened up the running lanes for Cameron Harris and Rooster and some of those guys, which is why they rushed for, I think it was 337 yards, the most they've had in years at Miami. And then you look at the next game against Louisville, some of the running lanes aren't quite there as much, and he picks them apart throwing for 300-something yards. And, some of the eye candy and things that their offensive coordinator, Rhett Lashley, has done getting guys open, plus Louisville playing some really crappy defense, led to another really good game. So, yeah, De'Aaron King has met my expectations so far and what he's capable of. And if he continues to play at this level, and if Miami's offense and Rhett Lashley continue to adjust and play at that level with a defense that hasn't played great yet but certainly has great potential, we could certainly be talking about them. Again, I don't think they're going to be Clemson, but we can be talking about them with Notre Dame as the number two team in the ACC potentially.
That would be just fascinating. And speaking of Notre Dame, not such a good appearance for USF and Jeff Scott in South Bend, to say the very least. I don't think anybody was happy with that. However, in the first game at least, they showed some things that USF teams aren't noted for, and that is very few penalties and no turnovers.
Yes, if you're looking for the positive so far with USF, that's exactly where it is. No turnovers so far, and they had middle of the pack last year, if I remember right. And they were one of the more penalized teams in the country last year, and they made big strides there. Now we'll see if, you know, whenever they get to play again, if they can do the other things out with figuring out a quarterback and, you know, showing more offensively than they have in the first couple games. And, you know, obviously a better defensive effort than the one they had against Notre Dame. I give a lot, you know, Notre Dame's a really good team too. Like, let's not ignore that fact. Notre Dame could be a playoff team if things break right for them. So yeah, the final score was extremely lopsided, but a lot of that's going to be to Notre Dame. And, you know, this was a true year one, maybe even, I guess I'd say a year zero for Jeff Scott, considering what he inherited and then the crazy offseason. So I think the bar is pretty low for him, and we'll see how they're able to meet it once they come back from this this game called off against FAU and whatever happens down the line, because who the heck knows?
Matt, the University of Florida Gators have long had expectations, but this year I think they're real, and I think they really do have a chance to get into the SEC title game at minimum. So they open against the Lane train, where anything can happen with Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin. Where do you think the Florida program is? And again, you know, it's not necessarily going to be, the home field advantage that they've enjoyed through the years. I don't think anybody will necessarily have one for a while. But this seems like a very, very solid team for Dan Mullen.
I think you're right. And we have to grade everything on a curve this year with life.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're all day to day.
Yeah, we're all day to day. So with that curve, a very, very solid team, I think that's the phrase you used, should be really, really good. I think here's where I come on them. I think it's championship or bust for them. I'm not saying they have to win the SEC. I'm not saying they have to go to a playoff. But they at least have to win the SEC East and win a championship.
Yeah, they
got to
get there, right? Yeah, exactly.
Again, just look at how things are set up. You know, if I were to draw up a team that I think would be able to compete best for a championship in this stupid godforsaken year, it would look like the Gators, where you've got a very good X's and O's coach in Dan Mullen, who's one of the best in the business. You've got a coaching staff that has known each other forever, extremely stable. You know, nine of the assistants are back at Florida, only the one departure. It would be a veteran quarterback who knows what he's doing and doesn't make a ton of mistakes. That's Kyle Trask. And a veteran offensive line. And Florida's got four of the five starters back. That's what it would look like. And then obviously you've got, you know, talent elsewhere, and the Gators have that. And you look specifically against Georgia, who, let's face it, they're the rival in the East. Georgia's schedule is a lot tougher. Georgia has a new offensive coordinator in Todd Monken, who I think you're familiar with his work and his abilities.
Well.
Mm-hmm. So you take away that offseason of them to figure out his system and him to figure out his player as well. Then you factor in that I think the expectation was that Jamie Newman, the grad transfer from Wake Forest, would be Georgia's starter. You start building things around him, and then he decides to opt out and go to the league. So then you've got new guys where, you know, you still don't even know if JT Daniels is going to be medically cleared, at least as we sit here and talk right now. So to me, you add those things up, and it's set up where if it's not going to happen now for the Gators, when is it going to happen? Because Georgia has been out-recruiting them. Florida, I think, is closing the gap, but Georgia's out-recruiting them. They're going to continue to out-recruit them. So if it's not now, then when?
That's a great point. I think continuity of coaching and quarterback is pretty much what this year is about at every level of football, whether you're talking about Pee Wee High School, college, or the NFL, that's for sure. Well, listen, I'm going to make a statement, and it's not rocket science, but as long as Andrew Lawrence is at Clemson, they're the best team in the country. Am I right?
Trevor Lawrence.
Did I call him Andrew? Where'd that come from?
You didn't. I have no idea.
Wow. Yeah, Trevor Lawrence.
I don't think you're wrong. I mean, Trevor Lawrence is unbelievable. Travis Etienne, the running back, is unbelievable. They have not missed a beat so far. And again, we'll see what happens once their schedule gets a little bit tougher and they have to play in Notre Dame or. You
know, sure.
Well, heck, I think it's in a couple weeks they play Miami, who at that point might still be in the top 15. And they've got, Miami's got the week off to prepare. So we'll see, but you know, Clemson's still really good. Alabama still, spoiler, has a ton of dudes. We'll see what happens with Ohio State and who they can get back and what they look like and how this weird offseason, this extra, you know, are they going to play or are they not going to play, how that actually plays out on the field. But, you know, to me, those are kind of the three best teams in the country, at least in terms of talent. And yeah, they're that, assuming nothing crazy happens, those are three of your playoff teams. And we'll see what happens with the fourth.
Well, whatever happens, it's going to be a fascinating year. I'm sure we're in for a wild ride, and you have to follow Matt Baker in the Tampa Bay Times on tampabay.com. And Matt, stay safe, stay healthy, and hope we all make it together to sometime in January where there might be a national championship.
Yeah, man, I hope so. I'm hoping that the game down there takes place, and I would love to be there to cover it because, you know, that's my job. But I'm also curious how that game is going to look, because it will be one of the first big sporting experiences with fans potentially around in this COVID-19 yeah. era. And as I understand it, there's a big football game happening in the city of Tampa a couple weeks after that. Am I correct?
Just a rumor, something called the Super Bowl, although I'm not as optimistic about a big crowd at Raymond James, but they are planning the game, and they're hoping it's with fans. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm curious that if we can get to the college football playoff national championship game, what that looks yeah. like, because that's going to give a big taste of what it's going to look like when the Super Bowl's here at Ray J a couple weeks after.
That'd be a great sign. Matt, thanks as always. We'll talk to you.
You got it. Thank you.
Man, I can't wait to watch college football. I mean, you know, my Arkansas State Red Wolves have represented very well for the non-Power 5 schools, and the Sun Belt has been kicking everybody's rear quarters. But
and we're 4 weeks away from the Big Ten coming back. So
I know. It's going to feel like college. I love my home college football Saturdays. Of course, I'll be headed on the road to go see the Bucks play at Denver on Sunday. That's going to be a nice trip. Weather's supposed to be gorgeous out there on Sunday, by the way. Can't wait, like in the 40s at night and maybe mid 60s during the game.
Perfect football weather.
Going to be perfect football weather. The Lightning, game four, of course, tonight. Game five on Saturday. Stanley could have a tan by the time we talk to you next time. That would be exciting. And then the Rays begin their final series with the Phillies and a chance to try to get the best record in the American League, which would mean something, home field advantage, if you will, or at least –
batting last. Well, it's like in hockey. You know, you get the last change in hockey. And baseball, yeah, exactly. You get to bat last in the bubble.
It's nice to be a home team. In baseball in particular, you get the last at bat. So what did you say? With all this, we need a watch, don't we?
Well, you got to keep track of all that time. You got to know when the game times are. I mean, the Bucks are at 4 on Saturday. The Lightning are at 8 on Friday and Saturday. The Rays, 6:40, I believe. Both Friday, Saturday, and then the 1 o'clock Sunday. So you gotta keep all track of it. And then all the college football on Saturday.
What would be better than have a Breitling watch from Breitling Boutique? That's right. That's the home of the Breitling watches. There's only 15 in the U.S., and we got one right here, right down the street at beautiful International Plaza. You need to check it out. Check out their new Endurance Pro, and that lightweight, gorgeous sports watch, if you will, athleisure, I should say. Or the Chronomat, which is one of my favorites. Go see our new friends at Breitling Boutique at International Plaza. And if you tell them Rick and Steve sent you, you can get a free $60 Breitling cap. This thing is really nice. When you just try on a beautiful Breitling watch. So it's win-win. You get to wear one of those beautiful watches. You might want to buy it when you do that. And you get the $60 Breitling cap. Just tell them Rick and Steve sent you from Sports Day Tampa Bay. So for Steve Burstyn, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.